No, it's exactly the same as the normal license.
I think the average website says that you've got to open up to 60 tracks.
It's cheaper. The only difference is the license. Yeah, it's same as the full version of the project.
Okay. Everything. Well, now you don't have the production kit or.
Oh, the production toolkit is significantly more expensive than Pro Tools. It's about 15. No, the production toolkit makes Pro Tools like Pro Tools HD. It's got some very, very nice features.
But without the space, without needing to buy this.
Without the hardware.
Yeah. And we cannot upgrade to 11 with this one. For example,
you can pay for the upgrade.
No, you can't. You can't upgrade from still in addition to any products. You have to buy a new one.
Oh, really?
A new one. £600. £200 for still in addition, £600 for a new one.
Because I wanted to upgrade and check and upgrade the all the stuff. And
right.
You will save all the differences on the Avid website.
Don't know yet. I will today show you an issue between 9 and 10.
Is it possible in Protons, can you like slice audio and assign different plugins that slice audio
no.
without moving tracks? You know, Cubas, you can do that.
Yes, you can't do that. In
okay.
Yeah, again. this is actually for a song rather than an album. If anyone's heard of this? It was, I suppose, the title song for a film called FM. Anyone want to guess the engineer? And Roger Nichols, who... How do you spell it? Is it MSCH? Or... Yeah, it's MSCHOLS. Roger Nichols is another very sort of famous, successful engineer, well known for his work with Stevie Wonder, Frank Zappa, Crosby, Stills and Nash, Roy Orbison, that sort of thing. So this, go away, it's okay. Spotify to play things. There's about 500 versions of every song.
YouTube.
This is just the I might do some Grooveshark or something because this is not the original version. But it's the only one showing on Spotify. Damn you, Spotify! What is Spotify?
Yeah. I've heard about it.
It's
that lets you download music for free.
No, it's stream music. You either pay for a membership and you can stream anything that's in their library, or if you don't pay for a membership, every three songs they play an advertisement.
So helping an artist get a little money on the stack.
There we go.
Wait till you throw that.
Yeah, it's like, it doesn't sound right. It's the same tune, but it's. So again, sort of funky rock sort of stuff.
Yeah.
like the main elements are quite dry, like the vocals and the drums and so on, and then you've got these, the strings and the guitars are all very sort of reverberating. Sort of reverb, saxophone, slightly Kenny G sort of sound. Unfortunately, saxophone is one of those instruments that can, if not used correctly, sound incredibly cheesy.
Yeah.
Unless it's like jazz or something like that, but yeah.
Some Kenny G stuff.
Exactly, yeah. Anyway, so what I want to do today, well, I'll tell you what I want to do tomorrow. I've booked us some time in the Neve VR studio so that we can go in and sort of do what we did with the EQ sort of stuff and play around with both the effects, because obviously some of you presumably have used, say, reverb plugins and so on, but it's nice to actually get your hands on some of the hardware and see how that works. And the room I've booked has the Lexicon 480, which is this mystical, amazing reverb. Tomorrow. And there's a few, like, obviously some compressors on and gates and so on the console and a couple on the rack, so we'll go in there. What I was thinking, one of the things that we usually do, because there's quite a few of you guys and the studios are not that big, once we start get doing practical stuff, we're going to be splitting you guys into two groups. And sort of coming in for half a day each. So I think tomorrow, simply because last time it was a little bit crowded, might already start splitting you guys into groups, and I think that way everyone gets a little bit more focused time rather than sort of sitting at the back wondering what the hell's going on. So we'll sort out groups a bit later on. Yeah, because that will also be based largely on who plays what instruments. Because once we get into the studios and start learning to use the consoles, of course, we're going to need to be able to have something to record. So it makes sense to put you guys into groups that would eventually become bands. So what I want to do today is a couple of things. There's a few things to talk about still in relation to sort of dynamics processing in general, and I want to show you guys some of the plugins in Logic, just because they demonstrate a couple of things that the Pro Tools ones don't have. For example, this hysteresis feature that I talked about yesterday. And then I'm going to give you guys an assignment.
Today?
Which one? EQ assignment. Yes. Is it the 19th? Oh, 19th is the ear training, sorry, yes.
EQ is later, 2 weeks later, right? I think it's by my first person.
I'll have a look during the break, I'll have checked the calendar.
Those calendars don't work, like I told you. Apparently, Steve said that they connected with our student portal and they don't
know. The Google, we're talking about the Google calendar thing,
yeah.
Okay, it does work on your one? Okay.
It didn't work on mine.
No, it doesn't work at all.
Well, before I show you the portal stuff, I'll. Do you guys all know where to find the document we call the color charts, which is the.
Yes.
Yeah.
What? Dan, you were unable to find them before? No?
I've had them before, but I couldn't find yesterday.
They are. Let me just log into the.
I spent days looking for it, to be honest.
That's right. They're now. They're under color charts and production related information.
Okay.
And so if we check that. I've got a lot more stuff on the stream. Okay, I'll talk to Itai, who's sort of in charge of that sort of stuff. Because
surely don't have it.
You guys are blue, aren't you? Yes, which means that the audio edit assignment is due in that week, which is the week of the 29th of April. So whatever the Friday is of that week. Deadline is always Friday, 6 p.m. Which means you should be submitting your assignments on like Wednesday or Tuesday or something like that. Always assume that the deadline is a couple of days before it is, because the number of times people have come to me on a Friday and said, oh, my computer's just crashed and I've lost all my whole project, or something like that, on the Friday. If you're actually submitting a project commercially, is that a good excuse? No. So assume the deadline is a couple of days ahead, so that you have a couple of days up your sleeve in case there's any technical issues.
I don't have that thing on the door.
Okay, you mean
it's not there.
Like color charts,
color charts, and production yeah. information.
All right. Well, in that case, talk to Itai during the break and make sure it's available.
Yeah.
I've been trying to do it for a few days.
One month.
I was thinking I'm going crazy.
Okay. Anyway, shall we continue talking a little bit about some of this dynamics processing stuff? This is the song I want to use today. Okay, so this will be today's track. Example of this, I was trying to find something that would demonstrate this. Okay, so this piano is recorded with two mics, so it's in stereo, and I don't know if you guys in the middle are getting any impression of sort of stereo width. Where are the low notes coming from? Low notes should be from over here, and the higher notes are coming from over there. I want to compress this piano. Now, how many compressors would I need? I'm going to need two, or because there's two signals. Now, in order to demonstrate this, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this piano track, well, the two piano tracks, the left and the right, and I'm going to send them through a single stereo track. Okay, I can do this. We're doing this one here. New track. Piano. Okay, so now the piano is going through both piano tracks, left and right, are going through this other track here. And this is pan left and right, so there's just the one over there. Okay.
Got some spiel.
This is a bit of spill from the drums. This is all recorded live, apart from the vocals, which were added later. and all the layers of violins and so on that need to be turned up quite a lot in this mix.
Is it the guide vocals?
Sorry?
Is it the guide vocals?
No, it's the final vocal track. There were guide vocals, but we removed those and redid them. Okay, now, one of the things that you'll get in Pro Tools, this green track here is the track, is the channel through which both of my piano signals are passing, the left and right ones. This is a stereo track, so when I try and put a plug-in on here, we get two options. For example, if I try and put a plug-in on a mono track, we just have this option here saying plug-in. Okay, on a stereo track, we have what's called multi-channel and multi-mono plug-ins. Now, this difference between them is basically anything that's described as multi-channel will be a single plugin that operates in stereo, for example, in this case in stereo. Once we get onto 5.1 surround sound, you get 5.1 compressed and so on. But this would be a single stereo plugin. A multi-mono plugin would be two mono plugins, one for the left, one for the right. Okay, do you think there's much of a difference? What about things like EQ? And one thing I should also mention, when you put a multi-mono plugin, this is the same as putting two separate mono plugins, but the controls are linked. So if you make a change on one, the same change happens on the other. Not necessarily in more CPU usage, but if I have... let's think about EQ, for example. Is there any difference between a single stereo EQ, so one that's got one set of controls and operates simultaneously on the left and right, and two mono EQs that have exactly the same settings? No, there's no difference at all. The effect left and right would be the same. What about with compressors? Do you think? Would there be a difference between, if I have a stereo signal, if I use two mono compressors, would it be different from compressing it with a stereo compressor? Yeah. It depends if the tracks, the difference between the two tracks. So what I'll do is I'll choose a multi-mono plugin. So this would be effectively the same in the studio as putting a single mono compressor on the left and one on the right. The controls will be linked so that both will have exactly the same settings, but I want to see if something happens when I do this. Unfortunately, Pro Tools has decided that the standard Pro Tools compressor is not available as a multi-mono one. You have to go for the multi-channel. This is the standard Pro Tools compressor. If you choose the multi-mono option, you don't have that one. But we'll try using the 1176 emulation. Okay. Where is it? Where's it gone? There it is, down here. Good. Right, so this is a... even though this looks like one compressor, this is effectively two compressors, one on the left, one on the right. If I adjust the settings on one, I'm adjusting the settings on the other. Okay, what I want to try and do is... let's have a look at our piano track. Here, for example, you can see that we've got significantly greater level on one side than on the other. Okay. So let's set up our compressor. First of all, let's have a listen to what we're getting out of each. So if we just listen to the one on the left, which I suspect may be on your right. Okay, so we'll... it's my left and right, which is... That's okay. And what's the difference between the two? Sorry? You can hear a bit of the guide vocals, but in terms of, like, the idea is that they should be picking up different parts of the piano sound, one picking up. So which one's giving us the higher notes? Okay. Well, at the moment, for those of you in the middle, the piano should be roughly sort of centered. Is it? Like, when I play both tracks. Start compressing this a bit. I'm going to go with a fast attack and release, because this will exaggerate the effect that I'm trying to create. And a fairly high ratio. Let's really squash this. Okay, what I want you to do is, okay, it sounds very compressed. I'm going quite extreme on this compressor. But what I want you to do, and you guys in the middle are going to be the judge of this, without the compressor, what we should find is that the piano remains relatively centered. It's got a nice stereo image, even though there may be sort of louder stuff on the left or the right. You get the impression that it's sort of here. Okay? I want you to listen when I turn the compressor on and see what happens in terms of where you think the piano might be in the stereo image. Okay, so first of all, without the compressor. Moving side to side?
Yeah.
Okay, why do you think that is?
Because of compression, the notes with high speed, they affect
different
the...
Different notes trigger.
That's right, because what we've effectively got is two completely separate compressors, one on the left, one on the right. When we reach this part here, for example, we've got much, much louder notes on your left, I suppose. These will be compressed more. These ones will be compressed less. So what will happen is that it effectively gets quieter over here and the stereo image will shift over to that side. Imagine you've got a drummer playing the drums, normally they're playing sort of the kick and the snare, and then they hit the floor tom really loud. And you've got a stereo mix of your drums, that single floor tom, which is over on one side of the drum mix, might cause that side of the mix to compress. The other side, because there's nothing loud on that side, will not be compressed as much, and the entire drum kit appears to go over there. Is that good?
No.
No, it sounds a little bit unnatural, doesn't it, when the stereo image is shifting. So, the moral of the story, I guess, is when we're dealing with stereo signals, generally speaking, what you want to do is use a multi-channel. If I switch this to the multi-channel version, it'll keep the same settings, because I haven't actually removed the plugin. Well, it's the same plugin, but now... relatively centered.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's happening in this case is this is still effectively two compressors, one left and one right, but they're sharing the sensor, I suppose. And you can do this with a lot of hardware compressors, for example. You buy a single rack unit that may contain two channels of compression that can be used independently of each other, but there'll be a button between them labeled link or stereo or something like that, and what that does is it ensures that one of the compressors is compressing, the other one will be compressing by exactly the same amount, so that everything goes up and down together. Cool. It seems like a fairly minor point, but I'd be surprised how many mixes I get with the drums that are sort of shifting back and forth in weird ways. Yes?
So when would you use the other one?
That's a good question. Have a look at this. Let's find a good example of this. Here, for example, I've got two... two violins. I've got one panned, in fact, I could pan them hard left and hard right so that you're getting one out of this speaker, one out of that speaker. In this case, we've got two sort of completely separate... This is not so much a stereo recording of an instrument. It's just two instruments that I happen to have panned left and right. Okay? Am I necessarily concerned with maintaining a natural stereo image? No, because there isn't really one. It's just I've got a violin over there and a violin over here. Now, had this been perhaps a recording of like a string quartet or something done in stereo, then of course I'm trying to maintain this impression that they're actually, you know, there, because when you record in stereo, the whole point is you're trying to create sort of an image of the performance. But in this case, I could quite happily let me drag. Oops. Yeah, cool. Put those two together. In this case, it might be entirely reasonable to use a multi-mono compressor. Let's get some compression going on. Again, I'll go fairly fast with the attack and release, and maybe, again, a fairly high ratio. Oops, solo safe. Oh, yeah. Okay, so here, what I've effectively got is one compressor on the left compressing one of the violins, another one on the right compressing the other violin. They're completely independent. One of them could be applying significant amounts of compression, while the other one might not be. But does this really matter too much? Not really, because they're completely independent instruments. And I can sort of demonstrate this, I suppose, by... if I turn one of them down, the amount of gain reduction on the right-hand side now is, well, nothing, because there's nothing on the right. It's not really sort of affecting any sort of predefined stereo image.
Sorry, it's misunderstood. Why is that better than just, for example, putting a compressor on each one?
In this case, it's not really any different. But what I might do, because I've got lots of violins here, is send them all to this channel and just sort of compress them together. And then I'm more interested, like, if the compressors left and right are separate, they sort of work in a way to automatically level out the left and right signals. Because this one, if it gets too loud, will compress, while the other one will remain constant. If it was a stereo compressor, if that side got too loud, I'd also be compressing that side, which would be great if it was actually a stereo recording of, say, a drum kit or a piano or something like that, but not might not be that useful. So it's I guess something you have to just think about when you're working in stereo, if you're applying compression to groups of instruments or to stereo recordings, whether or not you go with a stereo compressor or two mono ones. With the hardware ones, it's quite easy. You just press the link button, and it just ensures that they share the same amount of gain reduction at all times. Whichever one's compressing the most wins, and the other one will do the same. Yeah, it's something, you know, try it out with headphones on, and you'll be able to hear the difference. For those of you sitting at the sides, it might not have been as obvious an example.
Is there a multi-channel compressor on Logic?
Logic automatically. Well, let's have a look at Logic, because I want to show you guys now some of the where's Logic. Some of the differences, because the Logic gate, like I said, has a hysteresis feature that we can sort of play around with a wee bit, and the Logic compressor actually has quite a nice feature, because what it allows you to do, and I'll import all my audio into Logic, and while it's importing, I'll explain this thing, because it's quite cool. Where are we? New audio file, the Hunter audio files. Create new tracks. Okay, this is slowly doing its thing. First of all, let's talk a little bit about compression, because I drew a diagram of how a compressor works. We've got the... I'll get rid of this for a moment. We've got the VCA... which controls the gain of the signal, and then we have the side chain with the sensor, which controls the gain of the VCA, so it reacts to the signal and tells the VCA to turn up or down. Yeah. Now, this is how the vast majority of hardware compressors operate, and most digital emulations, plugins, are designed to sort of represent the same sort of thing. But there are different sorts of compressors, different designs that people have used. For example, this is what we would call a VCA compressor, because of the VCA. There is a type of compressor, for example, known as an optocompressor. There's a few different brands of these things. The LA2A, for example, is an optocompressor. And optocompressors can work in a couple of ways. But what does the word opto, or the abbreviation opto, refer to? Not, that would be octo.
Oh, it's light.
Something optical. Yeah. The way optocompressors work, and one design of these still incorporates a standard VCA, but what they do is, instead of the sensor working, measuring the electrical voltage in the signal to determine the gain reduction, there will be
LED.
Yes, an LED here with its emitting light,
yeah.
And here
a sensor, a light sensor.
It's called a photocell, which measures the light. And so the gain of the VCA is not being controlled by, say, an electrical voltage, but it's being controlled by a light here. This light will increase or decrease in brightness in response to the amplitude of the incoming signal. So when this light gets brighter, what will this do? It will reduce the gain. So when the light gets brighter, the compressor compresses. Cool. How do you think this might sound different? No, the lights, and sometimes these aren't even LEDs. Sometimes in some of the older ones, it's actually just a light bulb. Now, the thing about a light bulb, in fact, in many ways, a light bulb is a little bit better, although modern ones do often use LEDs. The thing about a light bulb is that when you flip the switch and turn it on, it actually takes a brief period of time to light up. When you turn it off, it takes a little bit of time to get dark again. Yeah, and so generally speaking, optocompressors react sort of a little bit more slowly to the signal, to changes in the level of the signal. As a result, they often sort of sound smooth, I guess, would be a good way to put it. Not warm necessarily. One day we need to figure out what the word warm actually means. Yeah. So, I mean, optocompressors are one of the most common alternative designs. We've got a few in the studios, for example. They are generally, so because they've got this relatively smooth gain reduction characteristic, what sort of instruments do you think would be more suitable for? Maybe guitars, things like bass, vocals, that sort of thing.
Not professional.
Yeah, they're not very good at controlling the very rapid transients that you get with drums and that sort of thing. Although some designs are still actually very fast, but they tend to be smoother. Classic examples would be LA2A or the LA12, which is the more modern version, which just
kicks ass.
LA2A is a limp. Yeah, yeah. In fact, I can show you guys.
Is this the tag that looks like they've got lights on them?
No, you actually, rather conveniently, and I'm going to have to log into Facebook, so I'd like to turn off the projector for a moment so you don't see anything. No, because Joao actually just recently built an LA2A, well, he built one, and put a video on Facebook showing the photo cells working.
Joao, the guy.
The head supervisor. Unfortunately, if you've got an opto compressor and you take the top off and allow light into it, starts compressing straight away, so you've got to, like, here to film the video in the dark. Yeah. Actually, I can turn off mirroring so you guys can't see. There we go. Hi, here we go. Come on. Essentially, the brighter the light, so when the input signal gets higher in amplitude, that causes the light to get brighter. Okay. And the compressor, in reaction to that brighter light, will start to compress the signal. Yeah, there's quite a few of them. Where's this thing? It was about 2 weeks ago. Maybe I'll have to track this down during a break or something. No, I'm just trying to search photo cells. No, I'll track it down a bit later on. Compressor is what's called a FET compressor. FET stands for field effect transistor. So transistors are the components used in circuits to provide amplification. So for example, a VCA consists of a lot of different transistors controlling the gain of the signal. FET transistors, field effect transistors are a specific type of transistor. We don't need to go into the details because it's a bit sort of obscure. But these tend to be sort of the opposite. They're quite fast. They allow for very accurate and sometimes sort of quite aggressive sounding control of the signal. So a good example is there's a company called Manly that make analog hardware, and they came out with a hardware compressor limiter called the Manly Slam, which is really, really nice. And it consists of two compressors with very, very high ratios, so effectively limiters. One's an opto limiter and one's a FET limiter. And so the signal passes through both, so you've got the sort of smooth control thing, and then you've got the really, like, slam it, hit it hard with the FET compressor, and they've got quite different characters. These would be the three sort of main designs of compressor. And the cool thing about Logic is that the compressor plugin that's built into Logic allows you to choose these characters. Now, it's unfortunately not particularly accurate in its representation of how these different things sound, but at least you get some idea of the different characters of, you know, like the Pro Tools compressor is always sort of sounds like, you obviously it's got quite a range of controls, but it's just sort of, it's a compressor. Whereas the one in Logic at least gives you the option of sort of maybe trying different flavors of compression. So we can have a look at this. So I've got the same song again. I've just imported all the. I'll save this. Okay. this is just all the faders at Unity Gain. No panning or anything. And here are the vocals. Okay, so we'll find where she starts singing. And we'll try out some of these different compression types. Okay, so let's put the compressor on here. Now, the thing I already mentioned, the thing to bear in mind, as soon as, if you are using Logic for mixing, the first thing that it does is it automatically applies 4 dB of makeup gain, so things already get louder and therefore better. So do, for the moment, I'll put that back to zero, and we'll go from the top. So here, for example, are a couple of different designs. Platinum is the standard. Remember, I mentioned that Logic, you know, used to come in silver, gold, and platinum. This is the sort of standard compressor, the digital one. Then you've got two what are called Class A compressors. Class A refers to a particular category of circuit design. You've probably heard of what are called Class A amplifiers, maybe. Yeah. If you haven't, we'll be talking about them later. It's just a particular way of designing circuitry, and generally speaking, if you see something being described as Class A, the goal of the circuit designer has been to design a circuit that's very, very low in distortion. So Class A circuits tend to sound very, very clean. And I can't remember what the U or the R and U are. Then we've got a VCA standard sort of compression design, FET and opto compressor. So what we could do is set up our compressor just using the standard platinum option, and then just sort of try out a couple of different flavors and see if there's any difference. So let's have how might we go about compressing these vocals. Let's have a listen, and I'll set up a loop so that we're just going around and around the same. So when I press play, it always goes. Okay, first of all, overall the vocals just seem to be a bit louder anyway, but looking at this compressor, how should we perhaps go about compressing these vocals? What sort of feel do we want to get out of the vocals in this song? Quite intimate. She's sort of, it's a very delicate sort of sounding. So we could, well, we'll need to perhaps. Well, I'd probably, 4-1-ish is often a good starting point for vocals. We'll see how it goes in terms of, one way to think about the ratio control, actually, a good piece of advice that I was given when I was first learning this stuff. Think about the ratio control as a size control. 1-1 is like the biggest sound. High ratios make it smaller. See what I mean? Because size is based on dynamics. Like, so if you, the more you constrict the dynamics, in a sense, the smaller you're making it. Remember that for something to be loud, something else has to be relatively quiet to create that impression of loudness. Otherwise, it's just all the same. So we'll start with a relatively low ratio. I just want to see gain reduction pretty much all the time, only a tiny bit of gain reduction when she's being very quiet. When she's being very quiet, and then, but I pretty much want to see gain reduction happening most of the time. And even though there's only about 5 dB of makeup gain of gain reduction, I've set the makeup gain to about 10 dB just to actually get the whole thing a bit louder anyway. You see what I mean? Because it was just too quiet, rather than turning the fader up on the channel. Okay, if we go very, very fast on this. Longer release. What do you think? What if I go with the faster? Do you guys prefer the longer one? It's a little bit sort of nicer and smoother, isn't it? What's quite fun, a lot of compressors will have some sort of auto-release function, which the quality of which depends largely on the quality of the hardware you're using. For example, the Neve compressors that we'll try out tomorrow have an auto-release function, which is just great. It sort of bases the release time on the type of signal that you're using and generally does a fairly good job. Whereas, for example, the auto-release function on Behringer compressors, if anyone's familiar with Behringer, is, you know, okay, Behringer.
You can check the criteria that you allowed to release.
No, they don't generally publish the... I mean, with a lot of hardware ones, it's just based on circuit design, and there will be, for example, a series of capacitors and so on, which will sort of smooth out the response of the signal and base the release time on that in some way. But it's
they can give you, like, if you rely us, use our auto function, but we're not going to tell you exactly what it does.
No, they need to keep their trade secrets, I guess, otherwise other people will copy their designs. Although, interestingly, who is familiar with Behringer as a company?
Yeah.
What are they known for? Yeah.
Sorry?
Behringer? They make a bit of everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
They make cheap versions of good stuff, of high-end stuff. And what's really interesting is that a lot of the stuff they make looks very, very similar to whatever it is that they are trying to copy. So, for example, these look very similar. Yeah, in fact, a lot of it looks like Mackie stuff.
Mackie,
so,
yeah.
But the Behringer DJ mixer,
or the Pioneer.
Yeah, the Behringer DJ mixer looks exactly like a Pioneer DJ M600. Now there was a court case. This goes back a wee while now. Where Behringer released a mixing console that looked exactly like a Mackie. And Mackie apparently took them to court about this and said, look, you guys have just ripped off our design and you've used cheaper components and made the same thing. And Behringer were like, no, you know, it's, you know, all consoles are all effectively the same. It's perfectly reasonable for ours to look like theirs. It does the same job. And one of the Behringer engineers apparently in court had to say, well, actually, no, sorry, one of the Mackie engineers, he said, we actually made a mistake in the circuit design, which was rectified just before the console went into production, but some of the components were still left on the board, on the circuit boards. They're not part of the circuit, but we didn't have time to remove them, so there's all the rails and stuff are already still printed on the board. And the Behringer one had the same mistake.
Oh,
no. So if it did, anyway, sort of embarrassing for them to admit.
Because Behringer, it's a huge company.
It's a huge company.
But they bought Midas.
They bought Midas, yes.
Midas
and Midas is Clark Technic. Yeah. Midas is possibly the most respected live console manufacturer on Earth, and they just got bought out by Behringer. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Anyway. Okay, so let's try a couple of these different flavors of compression. So let's just listen for a wee bit to the normal one.
Now I'm
We'll just go through them in order. You'll notice that when you change between some of these different designs, certain things become unavailable. The knee function in this case and the peak or RMS detection are grayed out. They've just whatever, I'm not sure what they're set to. How does this sound? We'll go back to the original. Any thoughts? More emotional?
More like.
Sometimes her present platinum sounds smoother than the
Yeah, I sort of get the impression that the platinum one is a little bit smoother. This one sounds a little bit more aggressive, perhaps, a little bit more forward. So it sort of brings her voice out and makes it a little bit more present. I mean, yeah, it's just subtle differences. This one, you can see. Immediately. Look at the gain reduction. And you can see how much the gain reduction light is flickering. This sounds like a much, much faster compressor. A lot of, because you know, when it says 500 milliseconds or whatever in terms of release, that's a reasonably long time. It's half a second of you know, that's like you pushing a fader up over half a second to restore the level of the signal. The difference though is that, for example, if I've got the fader down here and I'm turning it up to this point, I want to get it up to here, so let's say this is 500 milliseconds or so. So we're down here at, say, minus 10. I want to get it back up to zero or something like that. How many different ways are there within 500 milliseconds for me to get the fader from there up to there? I could do it in a straight line. I could do it at a constant rate.
Yeah.
I could do it. I could start fairly slowly and then go way, you know, or I could do the first bit very quickly and then slow down. So even though these different compressors all say 500 milliseconds of release, it may be a different shape to the, yeah, a different contour, if you like, to the way it does it. And so this is a large part of the difference in sound between a lot of these compressors, is how they get from A to B.
They do it on software or on hardware as well.
Yeah, hardware compressors.
Compressors, you can do them harmonic or.
Yeah, you can do all sorts of things, and this is one of the reasons why there are so many compressors on the market, because they all sound slightly different. They've got different character, and people like different compressors for different things. So this one, yeah. Sounds very sort of fast, doesn't it? Even for the same setting. Yeah, because it seems to be reducing the gain reduction much, much more quickly.
Yes.
The VCA one, this is in theory meant to be a standard sort of hardware compressor design, like a DBX or something. Is fairly subtle, largely because this is sort of the standard compressor design on which most digital emulations are based. With our FET compressor.
I was through the sky.
slight difference in character.
I can hear the dogs
the opto compressor. Now, to me, this doesn't sound like an opto compressor. This is the one I think they've got wrong. But there's a few different sort of characters in there, aren't there? And while, you know, you may, when you change the type, you may need to adjust certain aspects like the threshold or something in order to achieve the same level of gain reduction. You know, you can get a few different sounds out of these things. Tomorrow, yeah, like I said, we'll try out a bunch of different compressors and see what the difference is between a few hardware ones.
So you're not too curious, you have to attack on 0 milliseconds? Or
you can on all of them. Yeah. This actually allows for very, very fast compression. I quite like the, I actually really like the Logic compressor. Really, really nice. I mean, for a built-in, you know, plugin, it's really nice. Okay, now, the other reason I wanted to use the, one of these tracks today was this. Let's have a listen to Oh, interesting. Yeah, I suppose. In that certainly different compressors tend to be like, if you ask any engineer who's got a collection of hardware or even plug-in compressors, they'll say that there are some that they tend to use on, say, drums, some on vocals, that sort of thing. And so, yeah, by extension, presumably, you will find people who say, right, I'm going to use this on rock vocals, but this is going to be on pop vocals. Certainly different settings are required even if using the same compressor. I would compress vocals quite differently in a rock track from, you know, something like this. I want to maintain some of the dynamics but keep it fairly consistent, whereas in a really dense rock track you might try and just slam it so it's just really consistent. And it sort of depends. I mean, for example, you get one of the compressors we'll look at tomorrow is a valve-based compressor, so it uses valve circuitry, and it's quite common. I've seen a lot of people who make sort of in-the-box electronic music, so just using digital plugins and so on, who nevertheless own some sort of hardware, often valve-based compressor, that they use to give the digital mix that sort of analog touch. So this is quite common in a lot of, you know, for a lot of dance music producers and composers to use some sort of valve stuff just because they feel the, you know, the samples and stuff they're using are a bit too sterile or a bit too clean or something like that. Whereas that may be inappropriate for something that's already been recorded analog. Like, I wouldn't probably necessarily use a valve compressor on something like jazz. It really depends. But we want to, or classical music, for example. You know, where you want it to be pristine, so you'd go for something that was as transparent as possible, that just controlled the level without necessarily adding any character to it. Assuming, of course, the recording was good.
Did you EQ classical music?
If necessary, yeah. Although I'm a firm believer in recording things the way they're going to sound. Like, I don't know what you guys think, but this is like I said. Okay, we've got some compression on the vocals now. This is all faders at unity, no panning, no EQ. Sort of sounds alright already, eh? You know? Spend the time recording things the way. I don't think, know if I told you about the Rolling Stones engineer that I watched. It was for a live show. I worked on a Rolling Stones gig back in New Zealand and just got to hang out during soundcheck, and the guy just pushed the faders up. They were all sitting in a straight line. We sort of sat back and the band started playing and it sounded absolutely incredible. And then he just did the occasional tweak on the EQs and stuff like that, but it was just, you know, they spent so long getting their instruments sounding good, putting the right microphone in the right place, all that sort of stuff, that, like, you don't need a a lot of the extra processing. It just sounds great. All it's doing is making them louder. Yes. Yeah. You get paid more if you can do that.
I mean, hard work when you start with a lower quality bass, you get paid less. And then later you became lazy, work with more higher quality bands, and you get paid more.
There was a guy I used to work with who ran a production company, a live production company called College Hill Productions back in New Zealand, one of the really, really high-end stuff. That was the company I was working with. We did the Rolling Stones, we did U2 and all that sort of thing. The guy that runs that, for some reason, is Billy Connolly's front-of-house engineer when he visits the Southern Hemisphere. So Billy Connolly gets on stage, talks, push up a fader, sit there, when he finishes talking, turn the fader down, pay £400 a night. But he knows that if anything goes wrong, this guy can sort it out. But the higher up you go, the nicer the gigs get. You start out mixing crap bands and pubs in Camden, and that's loads and loads of work. And then you get into the good stuff. You know.
Charge cheap.
Cheap. Don't undersell yourself. It's very, very hard when you're working with a band to say, I'll do the first gig for £20 and dinner. And then later on you say, actually, right, okay, now I'm going up to £100 because that's what I'm worth. Start not high, but don't start low, because then it's hard, because then as soon as you put the price up, they'll be like, oh, well, you were cheaper last time. Yeah. Also, people have a higher opinion of things they pay more for.
They think it's better.
They think it's better. Did you hear about the test that was done in Harrods? You know, Harrods, a department store where really sort of rich, pretentious people shop. they got some white fluffy towels for just like big bath towel sort of things, and they put them in two piles on either side of one of the like a aisle sort of thing. The ones on one side were selling for £50 each. The ones on the other side were selling for £5 each. Which one sold out? The £50 ones, because people go to Harrods expect to pay money, even though it's the same thing. Brilliant. Psychology, eh? So it's completely unrelated to audio. I wanted to use this because the drummer in this band is an orchestral percussionist rather than being a drummer, and she's got the lightest touch. So this is how hard she hit the kick drum. Apart from the bass player, who's a guy, poor woman and a guy plays bass, because presumably you need the hands to play double bass. So you can see it's really soft.
Yeah.
It's just tapping it. But what I was trying to find is something that would be a good example of hysteresis on the gate. And the snare in this case might be a good one, actually. There we go. There's a lot of spill here, isn't there? Okay, if we have a look at this, this is a snare hit. What's this over here?
Snare hit.
No, it's a spill from the kick drum. Okay, now she is doing some gentle stuff on the snare, but maybe we're getting a bit of that through the overheads, and what I want to do is just gate this, so we're only getting this, but not that. Okay. So I'll put the noise gate on here. So this is the Logic noise gate. It's got, just like the one in Pro Tools, and sorry, I'll bring that down so it's getting less reflection from the projector.
Stereosis.
Yeah, stereosis. Mentioned this yesterday. Okay. The threshold, the reduction control here is the same as the range control in Pro Tools. Do you see any ratio on here? No, so what this one does, if I put this on, say, 10 dB, or minus 10, rather, the instant the signal drops below the threshold, it just applies a fixed 10 dB attenuation. So rather than being a ratio-based expander, it's a range-based one. It's so it just drops the signal by a fixed amount once it's below the threshold. So 100 decibels, that's pretty hardcore attenuation, this. full on gating. Yeah, we've got attack, hold, and release. But yeah, we've also got the hysteresis control, which is what I want to try and demonstrate here. So I'm going to set these attack, hold, and release to their fastest possible settings, which will probably give us a little bit of distortion. I'll put the hysteresis on zero so it's not doing anything at the moment. And I'll just make a small loop around this sort of kick and snare thing. Okay, it's got a helpful activity light here to tell you when the gate is open. So we can see the gate is closed most of the time, but it's opening on the kick and the snare. Okay, is this gate doing what I want it to at the moment? So what do I need to do? Increase the threshold so that we don't get any of that kick. Okay, so I'll bring it up. Oh, getting a bit of distortion there. Okay, this is a snare. Oh, I need it to go higher still, don't I? Because getting it... There's no kick. Okay, but how does the snare drum sound now?
Weird.
It sounds really choked, doesn't it? There's none of that resonance. Now, obviously what I could do is adjust the hold and release times to try and allow some of the... It's getting a bit better, isn't it? It's a bit more natural. Okay. Now, if there was a bit more spill, maybe there was some, I don't know, piano or bass coming through, we might be getting a little bit of that through there as well. So what I might do, I'm going to leave these on their fastest possible settings and try adjusting the hysteresis control. I'll put it back at zero, so listen to the really choked snare. Yeah. It's just a blip. Even maybe... How does that sound?
Sensation is like you're taking two words from the middle.
Sorry?
It's kind of a corporate, kind of a visual operation we are not doing.
Well,
it's like listening to the first one, it's like listening not only far, maybe not so far away, listening maybe two rooms beside the room we are.
Well, you mean it's getting more of the reverb?
And now you make a couple of holes.
Right. Interesting way, I think.
There was a kick point after the snare.
That's the thing. So what I'm doing here, I'll make the track bigger so we can sort of see what's going on. We've had to set the threshold here, whatever that is. But that's just chopping off all of this stuff at the end here. So what I've done is I've set a hysteresis so that it will close now at perhaps that level there. In this case, 20 dB lower than the threshold that will cause the gate to open. So we'll open here, but close down here, so we get the whole sort of sound of the snare. Even though the kick is below the level of the hysteresis-defined threshold, it's not going to open the gate because it's...
What is the difference between a hysteresis and the release?
I've still got the release on... zero, so the gate will still close instantly, but it will close instantly at a lower level.
No, if you will increase release,
Well, that's the thing. Sometimes you find that having a release too long might let more stuff through, like more spill or something like that. Sometimes you do want the gate to close very, very quickly once it decides to close, but you want it to close at a different point from the one that causes it to open. Yeah, it's quite a nice feature to have. It does make things a lot easier. So the dynamics processing and logic is actually rather nice. I'm sort of hoping Pro Tools 11 might add some of these features. We'll see. Does that sort of explain the hysteresis thing reasonably well? Great. Okay. In that case, let's take a 15-minute break. And when we come back, I'll give you guys an assignment. puts all of this stuff together. Yeah.